It is 11:30 here at KRVN, which means it is time for Midday. Tyler Cavalli along with you. Thanks for making us a part of your day, wherever you may be listening. Here on this October 22nd, mostly cloudy here at the station. A little drizzle, on and off. At least no snow. At least not yet, though. That is coming here in the near future. Still some 20s out in the panhandle as well. But, boy, we have a busy lineup for you here this afternoon. So let's give you a preview as our own Susan Littlefield steps in.
Well, thanks, Tyler. Here's what's happening on a midday from the farm team. I'll kick everything off at 12:19. As we find out about a new wool mill that is opening up in Stromsburg, Nebraska. By the way, the first custom fiber mill in the state of Nebraska and the first one for the eastern half of the state. Then at 12:45, I'll speak with National Cattlemen's Beef Association President Marty Smith as we talk about some things that are happening within the cattle industry. Chabela wraps everything up at 1:17 as she talks about weather, agriculture, and aircrafts. That's a look at the midday from the farm team.
All right. Thank you very much, Susan. Let's turn it over to sports. Jason Jorgensen is here. And, well, Jason, we have reached that time of year, high school football playoffs.
We made it to the playoffs. There was a time there where we didn't know if there would be playoffs, but it opens up today and tonight. 8-man ranks, classes D1 and D2. Always kind of a cool day. You have games going on. There's a few afternoon games. Mm-hmm. Most of those are at night. We'll have an afternoon game over on KUVR this afternoon as Loomis, who's had a nice year, and Dennis Reese, the last year's head coach, they will take on Layton. That one starts at 4. You can catch it once again in the Phelps County and Loomis area at KUVR. Tonight, here on 880 KRVN, should have a shootout. Is your voice ready? Are you ready to call several touchdowns tonight between Highline and Southern Valley?
Listen, I'm only speaking when I have to today because I understand there are a lot of points, probably close to 90, 100 could be scored total.
I was doing a kick out of that last week. I got done with FKC volleyball and I walked out and I expected your game to be over with, and you were doing this Southern Valley Arapahoe game and it was like 72-40 at that point, and Arapahoe kept scoring.
Yeah, no, it never stopped. And tonight I think I was going to have that same kind of feel. So it's going to be fun though.
That should be a fun game, and we'll have a good game over on Cami Country as well. As 7-1 Elm Creek will be at home against 6-2 Hitchcock County. There will not be a whole lot of passing in this game. These two will line it up and run it right at one another.
So you will be done by the time I have reached halftime.
Probably. That would be
right,
my guess.
Par.
Maybe middle of the third quarter, but I'll look forward to the finish of your call tonight.
Very good.
Well, we talk about that all week long. Watch that show. It'll be like a 20-14 game tonight.
Usually how that works. Yep. By the way, if you're going to the games, you may want to dress up. It's going to be cool.
Yep. I know I'll be in the press box. You'll be in the press box. Not everyone will be in a press box. So,
if you don't want to go to the game, at least we have them on the radio.
That's true. And we have a triple header again tomorrow, too, so you can find that schedule at krvn.com.
Good stuff. A lot of football. Regular season coming to an end tomorrow. Playoffs start today. What more could you want? Let's turn over to Bob Broken. How are stocks looking so far?
Moving lower on Wall Street after starting the day with some gains. Traders still looking for looking at latest company earnings reports and watching for signs of whether an economic aid plan will come together in the next couple of weeks. Also, the number of Americans seeking unemployment benefits dropped a little bit last week. At the same time, a couple of companies are coming out with revenue reports. Union Pacific says its revenue slumped by double digits, though the volume of shipments it handled rebounded.
11:44 here at KRBN. Time to check in with regional ag weather. And our own Paul Perkins has stepped in as regional ag weather today is brought to you by Holtridge Irrigation. Well, Paul, you and I were talking about the different temperatures, and I've discussed it many times this morning, how wonky they are. You have 20s and 30s in the Panhandle and in the Sandhills. Then you go down into Kansas, and they're having all the fun. We're seeing 70s in Manhattan.
Exactly, and to the southeast of Wichita, they're close to 80 right now. It's 79 in southeast parts of Kansas. But we are getting that compressed effect right now with the cold front pushing through the region. Just like when you're pumping up a bike tire, it always gets real hot if you ever feel that around there. Mm-hmm. That compressed air is helping to warm those temperatures up very nicely just ahead of this cold front. So we're seeing those 70s in Kansas, and then much colder air with temperatures into the low 30s in much much of north central and northwestern areas of Nebraska.
Boy, that would be nice if they could share some of that warm air, warm compressed air. Because again, you mentioned 80s down there as well, further south you go. So.
Exactly, and unfortunately, they probably won't be able to share it for very long because it's that cold air is on the way. Right now, we do have temperatures, as Tyler mentioned, as low as 29 right now at Alliance, some low 30s in much of north central Nebraska on into the panhandle. Temperatures more so in the upper 30s towards Ogallala, towards Broken Bow and Ord into northeast Nebraska. Most of us in Nebraska with temperatures right now in the low to mid 40s, but we are as warm as 60 currently in the Beatrice area, 72 at Falls City, some mid to upper 40s for the most part over northwest and north central Kansas. We'll see that turn to cold weather begin today with a strong cold front pushing southeast. Early afternoon highs about 10 to 15 degrees below normal for most of us before those temperatures turn steady and drop through the afternoon. Northwest winds increasing behind the front for this afternoon through this evening, expecting wind gusts of 25 to 35. Some drizzle and light rain also possible, but mainly across the central and east. The much colder air will lead to a killing freeze for tonight through Saturday night with overnight lows in the 20s. Then it gets even colder. That will drop our overnight lows to near record levels in the teens for Sunday night and Monday night, expecting daytime highs on Monday and Sunday only in the upper 20s. It's going to be a killing freeze actually during the day. Now, snow chances increase for Saturday night, and they will stay likely through Sunday night. Slight chances expected to linger into Monday. It's still a little too early to tell for sure, but the forecast confidence is increasing for snow accumulations of 2 to 5 inches in west central, western, and northern Nebraska, lighter amounts farther south and east. That cold air will add to the possibility of snow accumulations, but limited moisture will help to keep the accumulations down. In the long-term forecast, temperatures likely to remain colder than normal for Nebraska, Kansas, and the central and eastern U.S. for Tuesday through the first 4 days of next month. The outlook begins with near normal to slightly above normal precipitation the middle of next week for Nebraska and Kansas. The outlook is much drier later on with below normal precipitation, very likely for Nebraska and Kansas late next week through the 4th of November. In the latest regional drought monitor, none of Nebraska drought free. Most of the state, though, abnormally dry to a moderate drought. Severe drought continues along and south of I-80 from Hastings to Ogallala. In central Nebraska, from about Burwell south to Loup City and St. Paul. Also in eastern Nebraska to the north of I-80. In the Nebraska Panhandle, nearly all of the Panhandle in level 3 extreme drought. There are also no locations in Kansas that are drought-free. Nearly all of the state abnormally dry to a moderate drought. Counties right along the Kansas-Colorado border in severe to extreme drought. Weather factors affecting the markets include a strong cold wave forming over the U.S. and limited rain for the Black Sea wheat areas in the Midwest. A stormy and colder pattern will be unfavorable for the field and crop drying and will delay the harvest. The southern plains expect very cold temperatures for the season over the next 7 days. That may be stressful to early developing winter wheat. There will be occurrences of rain in parts of central Oklahoma and south central Kansas, offering some easing of the drought conditions. The northern plains will have bitter cold the next 7 days, along with periods of snow, a combination that will disrupt their harvest and stress livestock. Overnight low temperatures Sunday to Monday in the northern plains expected to plummet into the single digits with below zero wind chills. Russian wheat areas will have only light rain this week with minimal crop benefit. All of the Black Sea region has rainfall deficits currently of 80 to 90% below average.
We were talking about the cool temperatures here in Nebraska. I suppose the alternative could be the snow that South Dakota is getting.
Exactly. And right now, it's just a little bit of light snow. And we'll be seeing some of that snow move in from the northwest. Since it's coming in from the northwest, it's not going to have a whole lot of moisture. And a lot of it gets wrung out over the mountains. Thus, we'll probably only see some lighter snow accumulations over the next few days.
All right. Fingers crossed we don't get a lot of snow, at least in the near future. If somebody was interested in looking at the forecast, where can they do that at?
Weather page. KRVN.com.
Thank you very much, Paul.
Nebraska's first custom wool mill is up and running in Stromsburg, Nebraska. Good afternoon. I'm Susan Littlefield on the Rural Radio Network. Kelsey Patton is owner of the fiber mill, where they process wool, llama, alpaca, and other fibers into yarn, roving, and so much more. I had the opportunity to tour the facility ahead of this Saturday's open house.
When I was 13 years old, I told my mom that I wanted to knit a sweater, but first we had to get some sheep. And We had dairy goats, so this wasn't really that big of a stretch. So we did end up getting sheep. And she found someone to teach me how to knit, and I learned how to knit socks, and we got a spinning wheel, and we got sheep, and I started learning how to spin and how to weave and do all the fiber arts I could. And ever since then, I've really had this really deep love of all things wool and all things fiber arts. So about 10 years ago, in April of 2011, I started my business, Spindle, Shuttle, and Needle, and it was online only at first. It was a yarn shop. I had boxes of product under my bed in my dorm room. And that fall, I finally opened my physical yarn store here in Stromsburg. And by the next spring, the idea had already started of maybe opening a wool mill. And at that point, I didn't know too much about what actually went into that. But I thought it sounded like just a fantastic idea. And about three and a half years ago, I decided that if I was going to do that, I needed to actually start doing the research for it and figuring out a business plan. And I worked with the Nebraska Business Development Center. And eventually, once I got my business plan done, I moved on to working with REAP for loan assistance and figuring out, you know, how to get that into a bank and stuff. And now, well, here I am. I've got a wool mill.
And she explained to me what was the intriguing factor to start the wool mill.
First of all, I had seen some different videos and things of equipment working and of equipment making yarn and making the other products, and I thought that was really neat. There was, at the beginning, a little bit of a misguided idea that, it's going to be just so much easier to cut out the middleman for the rovings and things that I was selling in my shop. Not that that's completely misguided, but there's a lot more work that goes into it. But then also just the whole, I saw that there was a tremendous need in the market. There's Nebraska, I think, is fifth in the nation for sheep production, and yet we do not have a custom wool mill until now. So everyone who has sheep and has their little flocks, like my mom's flock of 40, there's lots of flocks around that size, because I think in the U.S., 90% of flocks of sheep are under 50. So those smaller flocks, people are bringing their wool out of state to be processed in mills in Iowa, South Dakota, or Kansas, or Colorado, or else they're selling them to the wool pool for basically pennies, and when you have a flock that small, that doesn't pay. So I'm hoping with this to expand the market for Nebraska wool and market it to the world.
Those conversations coming from Kelsey Patton. She is the owner of the Fiber Mill that is located in Stromsburg, Nebraska. This Saturday, by the way, they are going to have an open house. We're underway at 10 o'clock and going till 5. Get a chance. Go check it out. I'm Susan Littlefield on the Rural Radio Network.
It is time for Midday Sports. Here's our own Jason Jorgensen.
Hey, thanks, Tyler. State high school football playoffs get underway this afternoon across the state in classes D1 and D2. In D2, Loomis will be taking on Layton. Wolves head coach Dennis Reese believes playing at home is a plus.
Oh, that's a big advantage, you know, because you're not having to travel, and you can be prepared for just having a nice night of rest in the game before, you know, day before the game. And so we look for that kind of stuff.
Loomis is appearing in the playoffs for the first time since 2016. They're 7-1 this year. Layton is 5-3. That game this afternoon at 4 can be heard on KUVR 96.9 FM and 1380 AM. Here tonight on 880 KRVN, D1 action as Highline will host Southern Valley. Kickoff is set for 7. And on Cami Country, 92.7 in the Elm Creek area, the Buffaloes will host Hitchcock County. That one also begins at 7. All three of those games can be heard at KRVN.com. Well, UNK is just a little less than a week away from starting up the season at Pittsburgh State, and head coach Josh Lynn feels things are starting to come together.
We are getting there. I mean, it's exciting. I think we're starting to get the summer out of us. It's only taken us 5-6 weeks. But, you know, one thing is we're starting to get our legs underneath us. We're starting to get the minor nicks and injuries out of the way, and it's good to get a whole football team out here.
The Lopers are coming up. Their first winning season since joining the MIAA. We'll have next Saturday's game for you on 93.1 The River. And this year, you can also listen to all the Loper broadcasts on 106.9 in the Kearney area. The World Series is tied at a game apiece after Brandon Lowe broke out of a three-week slump. He homered twice and had three RBIs as the Rays downed the Dodgers 6-4. He put the Rays ahead with a first-inning blast, then added a two-run shot that made it 5-0 in the fifth. He'd been hitting just a touch over 100 in the postseason. And tennis great Boris Becker appeared in London court today, accused of failing to surrender two of his Wimbledon trophies to be sold to help settle his debts. The 52-year-old, who declared bankruptcy 3 years ago, also failed to turn over his two Australian Open trophies. That's according to a new 28-count indictment that claims he hasn't complied with orders to disclose information. That is a look at sports. For more, find it anytime at KRVN.com. I'm Jason Jorgensen.
Three new cases of COVID-19 were reported by Two Rivers Public Health Department in the seven-county region it serves for Wednesday, October 21st. Check the Two Rivers website for more detailed information for citizens on current COVID-19. New confirmed cases for Wednesday include Buffalo County 57, Dawson County 7, Kearney County 6, Phelps County 3. Two Rivers recommends continued actions to prevent the spread of COVID-19 or any illness. Those actions include: know how it spreads, wash your hands often, avoid close contact, cover your mouth and nose with a cloth face cover when around others, and cover your cough and sneeze with a tissue or your sleeve, clean and disinfect, monitor your overall health, and specifically monitor for signs and symptoms of COVID-19. Stay home if you have symptoms or are awaiting test results. In other news for the coronavirus, the number of people hospitalized with the coronavirus in Nebraska continued to set new records as the total number of virus cases surged above 60,000 on Wednesday. The state said 400 people were hospitalized with COVID-19, up from the previous day's record of 380. Health officials say they are working with hospitals across the state to make sure they have capacity to treat all those patients. The state has offered $40 million to help hospitals add capacity as needed. Nebraska reported 899 new virus cases and 11 new deaths on Wednesday. The rate of new cases in the state remains fifth highest in the nation. The Drug Enforcement Administration is kicking off Red Ribbon Week Friday, October 23rd, with multiple buildings and bridges across the five-state Omaha division, lighting up red to recognize the nation's oldest and largest drug misuse prevention awareness program. In recognition of Red Ribbon Week, which runs October 23rd through the 31st, several landmarks in Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, and South Dakota will light up red to bring awareness to living a drug-free life. The Woodman Tower in Omaha will light up red in support of Red Ribbon Week. Communities across the nation are encouraged to go red for Red Ribbon by lighting up classrooms, offices, libraries, and other locations in red using red bulbs, gel filters, or red balloons and decorations. A lawsuit says the son of a former University of Nebraska official is accused of sexually assaulting a 12-year-old boy 3 days ago. The lawsuit filed Wednesday by the mother of the boy alleges that Jack Eichhorst assaulted the victim at a sleepover at Eichhorst's home in October 2017. The Omaha World Herald reports the lawsuit names Jack Eichhorst and his parents. It seeks unspecified damages for emotional distress, pain, and suffering of the alleged victim, as well as reimbursement of medical and mental health counseling bills. Eichhorst's attorney Vince Power says the allegations did not happen. Jack Eichhorst was convicted of child pornography possession last year. Reporting for the Rural Radio Network, I'm Ellen Simmons.
There's a lot going on in the cattle industry right now, and the big one has been the talk of price. Good afternoon, I'm Susan Littlefield on the Rural Radio Net. I sat down with the NCBA President Marty Smith to talk about some of the issues happening with our cattle producers.
We've continued to see recovery in the cattle market. This is a very tough time for everybody. It has been a very hard pricing time. At that point, though, we still had a very large backlog of fat cattle, starting back with the outbreak of COVID, with the packing plants slowing down or shutting down. We've managed to reduce that backlog significantly, and I'm optimistic. I think most of our experts are optimistic that we'll be able to work through that at least by November sometime. Going into the winter and going into next year, we should be back at some normal level of capacity and normal level of fat cattle in the marketplace. So I think that will continue to help strengthen these prices going into the next year.
Shared with me the thoughts of the working group of a subcommittee that came about from the summer meeting.
Our live cattle marketing committee, we had a subcommittee, or what we termed a working group, that we had appointed. And so after very long and very strenuous debate, was decided that we would form a sub-working group from that, giving them the task of, by October 1, develop specific target numbers or trigger numbers for live cattle trade and to try to do that on a regional basis.
And Smith shared with me the work that was done by this working group and who they reached out to get some of the information that we now know is part of their suggestions.
A group of livestock economists from all over the U.S. and got their input, got a report as to what the various professors or ag economists, livestock economists, thought those triggers ought to do. Plus, they used their own experience. We've got some of the, you know, largest and some of the smaller cattlemen that are part of the feeders that are part of that group. So with that, they have developed triggers for each of the various regions, and that's...
And Smith believes they've reached the goals that they set back in the summer meeting.
Absolutely, they did. They came out with specific numbers by region, and they also developed we're working through this, but they came out with a system of what would happen if those triggers were not met. And in other words, if it were a minor situation, what they viewed to be minor, more or less a warning, let's get these numbers up. But if that happened for 2 months in a row, and went through a big process, is this going to be a rolling average or a monthly average? And, so they've reached their objective, reached what that overall live cattle marketing committee had asked them to do. And there was a lot of work that went into that. I mean, I really got to commend all of the people. When we appointed that, we wanted to make sure, because there's several different views of this, we tried to balance that committee out, both regionally but also in terms of point of view. And they came together at least 2 times a week, and then going back to the bigger working group and then to the committee, yes. And then they were each given assignments or took assignments in terms of getting additional marketing information, getting additional figures, working through that process both with USDA, again with a lot of these professors, and where are we going to get this information, what is it going to look like. So a lot has been done with that. I'm very proud of what they have done together.
And we know that there's been assistance out there, CFAP, CFAP 2. I asked him what this has meant to cattle producers.
With the first round of CFAP payments, we recognized, and we had these conversations with the administration, all the way to the president, all the way with President Trump, that this was going to be not a complete cure for the industry and not a complete cure for every cattleman, but would give us something to help us stay in business. With CFAP 2, and as part of the first process, NCBA again put together an analysis using some of these same individuals, but we put together an analysis of the impact on the marketplace. With CFAP 2, we are getting very close to the numbers that we had projected for losses, both in the cow-calf segment, but also the feeder segment. So, that doesn't work for everybody, but it does give, and part of the process, make sure that every cattle producer got some compensation, some money out of it.
He did share with me that it's nice to be back on the road, across the tables from cattle producers versus via a computer screen.
Well, and I, certainly I'm not doing as much traveling as my predecessors have done in this position, simply because we've had no meetings. Mm-hmm. We've done a lot virtually, and that's been very difficult. I will say that we're seeing a much better overall response and attitude around the country. We're not back, but we certainly are coming through this better than a lot of other industries and businesses.
That's my conversation with NCBA President Marty Smith. I'm Susan Littlefield, the Rural Radio Network.
With the Business Report, I'm Bob Brogan. Stocks were moving lower earlier on Wall Street after starting the day with some modest gains. Traders are looking over the latest company earnings reports while watching for signs of whether political leaders in Washington can agree on an economic aid plan in the next 2 weeks before the November 3rd presidential elections. Most big companies have been reporting better profits for the summer than expected. The number of Americans seeking unemployment benefits fell last week to 787,000, a sign that job losses may have eased slightly but are still running at historically high levels. With confirmed infections having neared 60,000 over the past week, the highest level since July, many consumers have been unable or reluctant to shop, travel, dine out, or congregate in crowds, a trend that has led some employers to keep cutting jobs. Several states, such as Ohio and Idaho, are reporting a record number of hospitalizations from the virus. The losses are building at U.S. Airlines as the coronavirus pandemic cuts into air travel. American Airlines says it lost $2.40 billion in the third quarter, and Southwest Airlines reported a loss of $1.16 billion. Those losses came in the July through September quarter that is normally a strong one for airlines, taking in most of the peak summer vacation season. Union Pacific's revenue slumped by double digits, though the volume of shipments it handled rebounded from the previous quarter as the economy emerged from the worst of the virus-related shutdowns earlier this year. The railroad earned $1.36 billion, or $2.01 per share in the third quarter, down 12% from a year ago. Revenue fell 11%, volume fell 4% compared with last year. For the Rural Radio Network, I'm Bob Brogan.
KRVN, the river and Cami blaze new trails. And Thursday, October 29th, we deliver the 2020 Blazer to one lucky winner. Follow along on air and Facebook and Twitter as we travel the listening area, giving clues and chances to win some summer swag. Thanks to these blazing new trail sponsors, Eustis Body Shop, Eustis, Cozad, Lexington, Kearney, Grand Island, and Lincoln, SureTop, Angus and Charlet, Farnham, Nebraska Land, Kansas Land and Colorado Land Tire Group, and Central Valley Irrigation, Holdridge, Lexington, and Carmel.
Before putting a lot of stock in the 10-day weather forecast, remember the aircraft industry has been suffering from COVID-19 like everyone else. Why is it important for people to be flying, especially over the Pacific Ocean? Don Day, meteorologist, says weather forecast models use data from weather balloons on the ground and from aircraft to gather forecasts.
But where we're really hurting with the lack of the aircraft data is the weather balloons that are launched, they're all land-based. You got to launch it from a continent or an island. So these large stretches of water, especially in the Pacific, there's no weather balloons going up. Without that weather balloon data, there's these huge gaps, I mean hundreds of miles of no weather data that we fill in with that aircraft information. Weather forecasting has always been handicapped and will continue to be handicapped by lack of data over oceans. It's one of those data sets that was hard to not have as much data with because of that.
The lack of data over oceans has increased since COVID-19 hit, and several airlines have been restructuring or shutting down. On the Airlines for America website, the U.S. airlines passenger volume domestically is down 63% from a year ago today, and international travel is down 78%. Day says while we aren't able to quantify the scientific impacts yet, with less data going in, the weather models won't perform as well.
If you are in a situation with any model that you're using, the integrity of the data that you start with, and it's so important on weather models because weather models are based on one set of weather data. And then you take that weather data and you project that initial weather data into the future. So you can say that if there's less data going in, the models are not going to perform as well, and there should be a measurable change in accuracy.
Not all weather models need information from airlines. Day says forecasts for the current La Nina gather the information needed from satellites.
The changes in sea surface temperature, which is what a La Nina is, when the sea surface temperatures get colder than average near the equator from South America west along the equator, that is something that has happened at the sea surface level. Satellites don't have a hard time sensing water temperatures because you've got this nice, very reflective surface across large stretches of water where you can get good satellite data. So we know what those sea surface temperatures are doing without the aircraft.
Even without the air traffic across the Pacific Ocean to gather forecast information, Day says ag producers should be careful in putting too much stock in long-term forecasts.
Number one, before we had this lack of aircraft data coming across the oceans, you always have to be very suspect of a long-range forecast past 5 days. So I would say that now more than ever, past 5 days, you got to be really careful on a long-range forecast. And to, you know, take it 5 days at a time is what I tell people, especially when they're planning. Despite the fact that there's all these resources online now that will go out 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 days.
Day says the scientific impacts will occur next year when they are able to compare this year's data with 2019, when meteorologists have all the data available from hundreds of flights crisscrossing across the oceans. Reporting for the Rural Radio Network, I'm Chabela Guzman.
Clay Patton on the Rural Radio Network. Now let's check in with John Payne, Senior Marketing Analyst with Daniel's Ag Marketing in Chicago and publisher of the newsletter This Week in Grain. And John, wheat the leader to the downside here today, and soybeans really starting to collapse there at the end, pushing in that new high at 1085. Did that signal in some technical selling?
I mean, it would have been nice to close above it. I think, you know, a lot of folks were selling that that test of the high after the USDA report. It was taken out, which is impressive. Another purchase announced this morning of more beans, not just going to China anymore. So it's kind of an interesting dynamic here. But it, you know, the bull needs to be fed. But at this point, the technical action is good. You know, you have closing near highs. The volume, you know, isn't great. But there might be a day here where if we trade up 10, 15 cents on corn. I mean, that's possible, you know, to blow out. You know, as far as fund participation goes, there's plenty of room on the upside in corn. As far as wheat goes, you know, we're looking at forecasts in West Texas that are a little bit wetter. Kansas can get some rain. I think, you know, it's a little too early to write off the U.S. wheat crop yet.
And that is very true. As we take a look, currencies, also the dollar coming back here today, but we see equally with it the Russian ruble coming right back with there. So not too much to glean from the currencies.
Really, I think the markets are just going to pause here until the election. Specifically, I think the euro dollar, which has kind of climbed. As far as weakness goes, there is some, you know, rise in COVID cases. So you're starting to see the economy shut down again. Here in Chicago, they put business curfews back on. So I know it's not most of the country, but, you know, there's still big swaths of the country that are slow here. So that'll hesitate to get the dollar going. But in reality, I think it comes down to the election. I think if Trump wins, I think the dollar's stronger. And I think if Biden wins, specifically with a blue Senate, I think the dollar would weaken drastically, which, you know, political or not, I think that should be bullish on for grain. So, you know, we'll brace for that at this point in time. Markets are where they are, and it's hard to argue against it. I've been saying the same things for the last 35 cents, and I, you know, haven't seen much change yet.
Any comment from Goldman Sachs saying they expect 1% drop in commodities 21?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Goldman Sachs was short corn, you know, in July. So I think at this point in time, We want to understand, first of all, what's got to be grown. I think that's what with row crop farming, you know, different than other commodities, you can't project, you know, production. Production is so hard to guess, you know, and then market in the last six weeks have changed drastically to the point where, you know, you're questioning the supply and demand again, and that's where usually you get price exposure, and I think this is a good opportunity for farmers to do some risk management if you can.
And again, John Payne, Senior Marketing Analyst with Daniel's Ag Marketing in Chicago. Do remember, trading futures not to involve risk of loss.
Thank you very much, Clay. That'll wrap up this Thursday edition of Midday. You can go back and listen to the Midday podcast sponsored by DeVenny Motors. That can be found at KRVN.com and on iTunes.